Fly down, rainbows in the sky, let's fly away. Like a bird, you're free to see the boundless face of the earth. Let the wind blow you like a kite.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Destructo Discourse. This is a Dragon Ball Z rewatch podcast. You're listening to episode 24, and joining the discourse this time is Jason.
Hey.
Aaron.
Hi.
Dave.
Hello.
And Matt.
Where am I? How did I get here?
You're in the discourse.
You're on Destructo Discourse.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He said that.
You already did this joke in the first episode, guys.
You're swimming in discourse. It's all around you.
It floats around you like a Chobani that you maybe forgot to open until a week too late.
It's not dark. That's too real. It's too close to home.
No, you should have said Yoplait. Then I could relate.
No. Go group or we
play,
riot.
I don't play with yoga.
Damn it.
This... More like go fart.
Like,
whoa.
Oh,
wow.
Whoa. Okay. The Destructo Discourse as a brand would like to distance itself for such inflammatory comments.
I like that this is like... This is the most iconic kind of conversation possible for people who grew up watching Toonami. arguing about Go-Gurt.
Listen, when you're on Toonami, you need a Go-Gurt snack.
If we can get Lunchables in here, we'll be in good shape.
I didn't have Toonami growing up, so I'm glad to be accepted among as one of your ranks.
You don't have to watch Toonami, literally, to be a Toonami kid in your heart.
Right. I have a question that will determine how the world sees you from here on out.
Yeah.
Lunchables pizza, cold or microwaved?
Cold.
I always have cold.
I guess I'm the monster then.
I'm with you. It's just that's what was packed with my lunch, and I couldn't pop over to the teacher's lounge going like, Mrs. Temple, I was wondering if I could pop my munchy lunchable into the microwave for 20 seconds.
Did you have
Were you at an all boys school or something?
Yeah.
This is what Jason sounded like.
Yeah.
We went to the same elementary school, so I know exactly who that is, and she did not let you use the microwave.
Absolutely
for sure.
Not. She was a
absolutely not.
She's a stern stalwart. I liked her though. She's kind of like McGonagall in a weird way.
We'll have to have a conversation about her later.
Uh-oh.
No, boy.
No, she's wonderful. She's the reason I can do math. I just was terrified of her.
I know that feel. Well, yeah, people who can do math are sorcerers.
No, I got to go backstage to the Terror because she was friends with my mom, and when my mom was doing Stampin' Up, like, demonstrations back in the 90s, she would, like, use me as a courier for rubber stamp products through school that Mrs. Temple orders. So my mom would put a rubber stamp set into my backpack and it's like, could you give this to Mrs. Temple?
So on this podcast,
Jason, you never thought to leverage that for microwave use?
Yeah, I never played the game.
You held all the pieces.
I had a bargaining chip.
Yeah,
and it was a six-piece Mother's Day collection.
Yeah, so this podcast is about Dragon Ball Z.
This podcast, we talk about our elementary school teachers.
Well, it's nostalgia.
But only the
90s.
Ones me and Jason had.
You know?
90s kids relate.
90s kids will know that Mr. Smithers was the coolest janitor.
He was so nice.
He was so nice. He would have let you use the microwave.
He would let you.
He really cared.
He'd let me use the cafeteria oven, I bet, if I asked.
I feel like it is pertinent to ask, is everybody familiar with what Dragon Ball Z is?
At this point, we can just be four random people who wandered in off the street.
Yeah, I heard of that show, that there, Dragon Ball Z.
On this podcast, every week, we cover three episodes of Dragon Ball Z. And then we talk about it.
Huh. That's so many episodes.
That's like a lot of episodes.
This being episode 24 of the podcast means we are 72 episodes into the show. Because that's math.
3 times 24, that is math. Thank you, Mrs. Temple.
time flies by. Are we in the hyperbolic time chamber?
Those extra time tests really helped me out here.
So I have a question for you all that is relevant to these particular episodes, as we will soon see. Are you familiar with the concept of a Freaky Friday?
I have not.
With Lindsay Lohan.
Yes, I'm... the one and only.
Yeah, it's the only version of that movie.
And, the yogurt lady.
Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis and her very good poops. She's extremely regular, thanks to yogurt.
Oh man, I don't even remember what kind of yogurt it was.
No, you mean the old lady that goes to Evo. I've heard of her.
Uh-huh. Still running from Michael Myers.
To this day.
To this day.
What planet am I on?
How did I get here? Where am I?
Is this
whose body is this?
Is this Destructo Discourse?
I wandered into the wrong podcast.
I guess another question I could ask is, whose bodies did you guys already switch with?
Well, apparently I switched with someone named Aaron, who does a goofy podcast about a TV show that I never watched.
I switched with some nerd who has his laptop set up on his desk next to his computer monitor, and the rest of his desk is covered in Warhammer 40k miniatures for some reason that he definitely doesn't use.
Just admires.
But they're not well painted, so. Mm.
I switched bodies with a sassy Shiba Inu who is secretly piloting the controls of this podcast.
So, King Furry.
I don't know where I am, but I'm in a dark abyss, and I hear your voices in my head. I'm honestly terrified.
Matt, I'm right there with you at this point.
Here's my question in terms of the Freaky Friday body swaparooski. If this podcast could Freaky Friday into any other podcast and the hosts swap and do the other podcast, what would you like us to do? And who would you like to do Destructo Discourse?
So like a hostile takeover.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there has to be like a podcast version of the Angelina Jolie rule. In this case, it's the McElroys. You know, if you couldn't, if you could get the chance to let the McElroys do your podcast for a week, no right-thinking man would turn that down.
Is the McElroys
guaranteed success?
Is the McElroys the free bingo space in terms of like who would you want to Freaky Friday into your podcast? Like I'm very down for that.
They could probably tackle any sort of topic with aplomb.
Mm-hmm. How about this curveball? How about this one? How about the cast of popular audio drama podcast Dark Ages coming in as the voices of their characters, talking about how great Goku is.
Super Saiyans.
The Dark Lord just rates every villain.
I think this is a superb Saiyan.
And that just sounds like a Dragon Ball Z villain.
He can conquer many worlds.
Frieza's a good conqueror, but he is overconfident.
I was just going to say Ira Glass.
Ira Glass!
Really class up this joint.
Roman Mars to do a deep dive into the history of anime.
Yeah, everybody from all the NPR hosts with their incredible names.
Get the NPR politics podcast to talk about.
Talking about
the
this
galactic
shit.
Politics.
Talking about this shit in their incredible, dignified voices.
Saiyans, conquerors, Dragon Balls. On this Namekian Life, we will be uncovering all seven. Stay with us.
Should we just talk about Dragon Ball Z? I don't think any of those people are gonna.
I think it's up to us.
Yeah, if you want a job done right, you gotta do it yourself.
We are the chosen few.
True warriors will gain a new level of strength when forced to confront the vile darkness of nobody else doing a podcast about Dragon Ball Z.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my mother told me.
We are the only Dragon Ball Z podcast.
Yes, statistically.
I checked. It's the only one.
No others. Don't search for it. Don't look. There's only us. Keep your ears.
Stop looking.
I see you going into the little magnifying glass on your podcast app. There's nothing there, we're telling you.
So on this Dragon Ball podcast, the only one, as previously mentioned, this week we're going to be talking about episodes 70, 71, and 72. Starting off with 70, the English title is Frieza Approaches.
The Japanese title roughly translates to The Way of Battle? The evil hand of Frieza approaches the Elder.
The way of battle?
The way of battle? There is a question mark followed by an exclamation, which is both inquisitive and alarmed.
I think this is one of those rare cases where they were basically the same. They were the same episode title, just
you're gonna,
a little more concise.
Just one is summed up.
Spoiler alert, you're going to see a little bit more of that nonsense in the episodes to come.
Oh,
exciting stuff. This episode begins where the last one left off, which is Goku powering up real big, like so big.
Super big.
And Ginyu.
Rare form for this show.
Yes. It's so it begins. I feel like this is the first time we're really experiencing exactly this.
A real holler.
Yeah, somebody just going all out on their throat and just standing there for minutes on end.
The first thing you have to develop when you start on the path of martial arts is you have to develop your vocal cords, your throat muscles.
It's yeah, very important
to train
it's
them
a little
for
known
resilience.
Fact.
Goku's holler.
A lot of martial arts masters started out as opera singers.
It's true.
Not many people know that.
Pavarotti and Shinhan, as we know him.
Dude, we joke, but have you seen Sean Schimmel's throat? That thing is thick.
Up close? Probably not. I don't have that camera.
Probably not.
Does it look like a Namekian's muscles?
It might as well be a bicep.
Yeah, his neck is... Wow.
Ooh, that's gross.
About the size of an arm.
Yeah, that's why we always see him walking around with a high cowl or a turtleneck. He's embarrassed to reveal the piccolo's knees that are his vocal cords.
He wears a weighted turtleneck.
Good on many levels.
I imagine, like, I'm picturing someone just struggling to get that off because it's a turtleneck and that's always a whole show. And then immediately, once it's finally off, doing the dramatic, like, throw my cape behind me move.
Cracks the
and
ground.
And commences the hollering.
Yeah.
Yeah, Goku's hollering like a Chevrolet purring up. You can hear the gear changes. Just, ha!
Ginyu keeps asking him to stop. Yeah. Stop it!
Hey, stop that!
Yeah, like, I think that's the first time I've ever seen a villain really do that. It's always the hero saying, no, don't you dare hurt him, or stop that! I don't think I've ever seen the villain do it.
Yeah. The narrator even frames Captain Ginyu in sort of the hero's light. It
yeah,
ends
and
with,
like I said,
does
that's...
the captain of the Ginyu Force stand a chance against Goku?
Yeah, this is where we're at in the narrative cycle.
The flip?
Yeah. Yeah, which is always Goku's role when he shows up. He momentarily takes the role of the villain.
He is a villain to villains.
Which, that's actually really profound now that I think about it. It's like Lisbeth Salander.
Ginyu has a bit of a breakdown.
Yeah, has a bit of a tantrum through the Earth's crust. You know.
Yeah, he just...
Yeah, what happens here?
Man, he just starts zipping all over the place.
He goes...
I'm just getting warmed up.
He
and
dives...
Then, well, he dives right into the lake, and Jay says he's just cooling off.
So he reacts really quick, too.
God.
He goes into the lake, and then... tunnels into the side of it underwater and then explodes out
and just is thrashing around back and forth.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
His
he's
head.
Like having it, he's like having a seizure.
Yeah, it's like you've just told him, no Ginyu, it's time to go out of the DC Discovery Zone, and he just takes that last 30 seconds to just tear shit up because he's not leaving without a fight. You're gonna have to drag him out of that obstacle course.
His mom turned the game off before he got to the save point.
Oh no.
He's got to beat that boss all over again. He's got to do the water temple again.
But with all this power, Tyler, obviously Goku will immediately start pummeling the ever-loving snot out of Captain Ginyu, right?
Well, first Ginyu tosses a rock at Goku.
Yeah.
And hides behind his friend Jace.
Yeah.
Yeah, a rock which pops against Goku like a bug zapper. Like, just... <zzz.
laughs> It was, like, kind of Boulder-esque.
In addition to the rock, he's also throwing several small ki blasts, but nothing is working.
Nope.
And Goku tops out at 180,000.
Yum.
Pretty big boy.
Delicious.
He starts glowing red and says there's no need to be afraid of me, as he's glowing the scariest color.
We cut over to Bulma real quick, who hover bikes into a village of dead Namekians. And she actually starts to grapple with what's been going on this planet.
Yeah.
Like, it starts Bulma to hit her a little bit.
Experiences self-awareness. and then desecrates the corpse of a child.
Is this the same village, though? Like, do we know if it's a different one?
It wouldn't be the one that Gohan and Vegeta were at, because Gohan buried them all.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So it's probably, one of Frieza's villages.
Probably Dende's, honestly.
Could be. Mm.
Does our count go down in any way? I didn't count how many folks are on screen.
I'm gonna be honest, I don't know where the count's at anymore.
Oh.
Because Guru said, like, they're mostly all dead, but then we see some more later in this in one of these episodes. So I'm just gonna say, question mark.
The song died with the Namekians.
It did.
Oh. Oof. Oofa.
So Goku tells Ginyu that he'll let, they don't have to fight him in his amazing power level if they just apologize and go home. And
he keeps pushing that.
Yeah, and Ginyu gets very upset about this and says, "We're the Ginyu Force. We never apologize." In the lamest voice of all time. He's so disappointed.
Goku is like a used car salesman for Retreat.
Like, now, what do I have to say to get you off this planet immediately?
Exactly. He keeps pitching the Ginyus on this.
Car.
They don't take him up on it, though. Nail makes it back to Guru's place, and Guru chastises Nail for going against his wishes.
You had one job, Nail.
Who's that coming? It can't be Nail. I gave Nail a damn job, and he knows how to follow directions. Certainly not Nail.
Better not be Nail walking in right now.
But Guru, I've said multiple times that it's Nail.
Gohan and Krillin make it back to Bulma's little hidey hole, but they can't find her there anymore. Krillin's first instinct is to wonder, maybe a mountain lion dragged her into this cave.
That's how you can tell Krillin is from Earth.
That's the fucking first thing he says when they get there, is maybe she's dead.
Maybe God willing, got her.
You leave a girl stranded in the middle of nowhere, and she's still gone when you need her.
Yeah, that line was like, "Damn, Krillin."
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I feel like, you know, on par, like, not in the granted, in the final analysis, the wilderness in this planet is not as dangerous as where they came from.
Well, hold on to that thought, because that's going to come up a little later.
Even then.
We haven't seen any dinosaurs or anything on Namek.
Yeah, that'd be fucking crazy.
Oh, are you kidding?
It's a good thing there's no dinosaurs.
Those are only on Earth, duh.
You need a functioning ecosystem, and Namek had an ecosystem collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there
true.
Can't be any
it's
dinosaurs.
Only plants. And fish for some reason.
There's a background note from this
and
scene.
And Lapras.
But no land animals, thankfully.
Not a one. There's a background note for the scene that I found very delicious.
Yes.
You may notice that in Bulma's little makeshift disheveled campsite, there is a dartboard.
I did see that.
And on that dartboard is none other than a picture of Yamcha with several darts in his head.
So those fuzzy feelings she had when they left for Namek are entirely gone.
Yeah.
She's had some time to really think through their relationship.
Really take stock of what him and Becky Hafford really mean to her.
Well, she did decide that she would rather just wish to be back on Earth.
True. Yamcha who?
Yeah.
Yamcha.
Not just Yamcha who, but also Krillin and Gohan who?
Yeah.
Krillin and Gohan notice her hover bike tracks on the ground, so they decide to track her down.
You mean the hieroglyphics?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gohan has read books. He knows what a hover bike tracks look like.
I feel like this is Krillin trying to make jokes and just Gohan not getting them.
It is not the time, Krillin.
They're not very good jokes.
They're not. I didn't say he was good at it. He's trying, though.
I can't believe it. A ruthless killer is about to find the key to immortality, and she's out cruising somewhere.
It's just Krillin's very bad coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
he doesn't know how to deal
one.
With stress otherwise.
Yeah, one-liners.
Dende has a new mission, which is to go out and help the Earthlings with the Dragon Balls.
Since Nail won't do it.
Yep.
Nail won't do the one goddamn thing I told him to do.
I gotta send this small child to do it.
Guru gives Dende a little power boost as a parting gift.
There you go.
Enjoy. Dende starts freaking the fuck out.
Well, he like only like just learned how to fly.
Exactly. Yeah. And now he feels like his whole soul is exfoliated.
Now that he got his license, it's time to go on the Autobahn. Ginyu. Thank you. Ginyu agrees with Vegeta. Goku is definitely a Super Saiyan.
For sure.
This guy right here in front of me, that's a Super Saiyan.
It's the only explanation.
The disease is spreading.
Saiyan, he's super.
Quarantine yourself while you still can.
But wait, Tyler.
Yeah.
Super Saiyans are supposed to be ruthless killing machines.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird.
This guy's gentle as a lamb.
Gentle as a lamb, which we have in space.
A space lamb.
There's a few of those moments in these episodes.
Yeah.
Space lambs are known to power up to 180,000 and glow red.
You ever think...
Captain Ginyu's homeworld is nuts.
A little bit.
It's the reason he got off of it.
Yeah, a ram on his home planet is a 20-foot-long centipede, actually. It's just
wouldn't even get him started
it.
On the cows. Why else would he name himself after dairy?
it's like the word Mordor, where just the word, it's the syllables themselves instill fear and dread. That's what cows are like on his home planet.
Goku doesn't care what people call him.
What is this, gentle?
Ginyu comes to the conclusion, he's not really a Super Saiyan. He's not a fully formed Super Saiyan. He's a little baby Super Saiyan.
And while he's ruminating on this, he casually takes hold of the world's slowest fly.
You know, the flies on Namek are maybe not the brightest creatures.
They probably don't have many natural predators.
No. Yeah.
Jace is worried that Goku is making Ginyu forget about style.
Not your style!
A fate worse than death for a Ginyu.
Absolutely.
Worry not, young Jace.
Frieza is getting closer to Guru's place. And so Nail heads outside to intercept him. And three of the last remaining Namekian warriors arrive to help Nail take care of Frieza.
Out of fucking nowhere.
It's the Snail Gang.
Well, I'm going to be honest, I forgot this part happened.
And one of them looks like the Heavy. Like, they looks like the Namekian version of the TF2 Heavy.
Kind of did, yeah.
Which is not a body type we've seen on a Namekian.
Yeah, he didn't
I think
have,
there was...
He didn't have pink abs. He had, like, green abs. It was weird.
There was, like, a big buff one in that... The Doria killed in that first village
very early,
but yeah, when Nail and Frieza meet, Frieza gives a whole speech about how like he saw something in the gift shop about you know how the when he came to Namek about how to really could really work the Dragon Balls, he was gonna need a password, mm-hmm. And Nail just looks him right in the eye and says, "I don't know anything about that. You should check with the Chamber of Commerce."
They have this weirdly, like, coy conversation.
Yeah.
That they just, like, keep playing into each other's bullshit.
The Chamber of Commerce is all dead.
This moment killed me, honestly. There's so much other crazy shit going on, and this is the thing that got me.
Also, this is a kid. The kids were watching this. The fuck's a Chamber of Commerce?
Can you imagine Frieza in a coffee shop trying to get the Wi-Fi password without having to buy another cappuccino?
I wish to connect to your Wi-Fi, but I don't agree to your terms and services.
I appreciate in the face of his own race's eradication, and probably the whole galaxy, Nail still remembers yes and.
It's very important.
He was trained in the ancient ways of improv.
He was trained fully, Guru says.
Mm-hmm. I love the Snail Gang that comes to our rescue here. Frieza says that they have about the combined power level of a Boy Scout troop.
I did the same note.
Which
what's
I
a
thought
Boy Scout troop?
They have what do Frieza Force Boy Scouts look like?
I was gonna say our Boy Scout troops are surprisingly strong, ruthless killing machines. So this is actually a bit of a compliment.
He also mocks Nail by calling him Lizard Boy, which like, Frieza's not very smart or informed. I don't think
Frieza is more of a lizard than he is.
Yeah, there's a tail on everything.
Yeah.
Weird choice of words there. Mm-hmm. The three Namekians jump Frieza all at the same time.
And they overpower him easily, right?
Well, yeah, you would think. Yeah. Except...
he's so small.
Yeah, he's really tiny.
Frieza's got this really good trick up his sleeve.
What is it?
It's called breathing.
It's called it's called whispering a secret into the wind.
Whoosh!
And
he
then
whispers,
the secret explodes.
He whispers a tornado at them.
You remember how to whistle, don't you, Nail? You just put your lips together and kill three of your friends.
So this is a moment that I both love and hate Dragon Ball Z for. Why doesn't he use this move? But this one time. It's clearly an effective attack.
Very.
It's very much like here's Frieza not even barely extending the shadow of effort to decimate folks. And like we've had hints of that before, like with a tail crunching into the ground with a visible crack.
Yeah,
or he destroys a small mountain with a blink.
Yeah. Like I feel like it's just more of that.
Maybe it only works on power levels the size of a Boy Scout troop. Mm-hmm. It's just got a very specific window.
It's just very flashy scales. Looking.
Finally, I get to use my explosive breath technique.
Or maybe he just has to be in just the right mood.
Frieza threatens to beat the information out of Guru, the password that he's seeking. And Nail tells Frieza if Guru were to die, the balls would also cease to be.
And also, he's very sensitive.
Yes.
He's a very sensitive person.
It's a weird mishmash of arguments that Nail attempts here.
Yeah, I like Frieza's response to hearing that if Guru dies, the balls will cease. He just goes, oh.
That is a good response.
That's good to know, I suppose.
That is the noise of a person who just realized that they are out of moves.
Oh. I didn't do very much research before I came here. Maybe I shouldn't have let Zarbon get killed.
Haven't been taking notes.
This is why I don't play chess.
Instead of playing chess, when someone challenges him to a chess match, he just destroys their planet. Immediately.
Yeah, and goes checkmate.
Yeah, he says checkmate to the dust. Frieza still decides to formally introduce himself to Guru by melting his window open. Pretty good move. We learn that apparently Nail is a cut above all the other Namekian warriors.
Guru's repping his boy Nail.
Yeah.
He's trained in the ancient way.
There's a weird moment when Guru finally speaks, because Frieza was like just sort of having some fun saying stuff. And what does he say? He says something about Frieza being the vile darkness that Frieza represents. And Frieza had a reaction I did not expect of being very upset and offended by this. I would have expected Frieza to be the kind of person that'd be like, bitch, you don't even know.
Whereas, you know, pants covered with the word evil.
Right, right.
Somebody will get that joke.
He does kind of become that later on. Yeah.
I mean, he starts to lean into it. That's how everyone's going to see him.
You got it
as well.
It.
Yeah.
There's also like a weird out of character to be moment where he and Nail are talking after this, and he refers to Nail by his name, which I've noticed a thing that Frieza does is he like doesn't show respect to his enemies by never using their names.
Very specifically, never says their name.
Yeah. He's
never
always called
has
Goku,
some kind of nickname.
Goku. Yeah.
I think he only uses Vegeta's name because like they have a pre-existing familiarity.
He used to work for
him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The last note I have for this episode is that Ginyu finally regains his composure, mostly.
Kinda.
Yeah,
in a way.
He's not all the way there, but he's ready to give it another go. Any other last thoughts for 70?
I have a bunch, actually. So yeah? Everyone else go first.
Well, I can say that, to me, looking at it now, the slow levitate that Frieza does over Guru...
Mm-hmm.
At the very end of this episode is just like the most threatening thing this entire time.
Yeah, it has the same vibe as the Ansem pose from the first Kingdom Hearts, where he just floats in the air with his arms crossed and doesn't even move to touch you.
Yeah,
come Guardian.
Slowly. Oh God, don't you start. Not on this day. Not
Submit.
On the Lord's day. Send Heartless.
Come Ginyu.
Come Ginyu.
Sin Harvest.
I just really liked the moment when Frieza and Dende kind of like cross paths.
Mm-hmm.
Dende's been powered up just enough for Frieza to notice, and Frieza just meh.
I got more important things to do.
Yeah,
kids are learning to fly so early.
Yeah. kids these days.
All right, Dave, what do you got?
Well, for one thing, the credits tell us that the three Namek warriors that Frieza dismantles all have their own. They're all voiced by different people, which is kind of surprising. You'd think they would just all be Chris Sabat or whatever.
Yeah, no kidding.
But they do not have names. They're just Warrior A, Warrior B, and Warrior C. They don't even have, like, throwaway pun names.
Wow.
Which I think
is
a weird...
Maybe those are their names.
I think is a weird contrast. So, the Bulma's little moment of awareness in this episode gives me an opportunity to talk about something that I've been wanting to bring up for a while and see what everyone thinks.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we've talked about how, like, you know, various characters, like Bulma, to a lesser extent Krillin, Gohan in the very, 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 very beginning, are, you know, counterpoints to the rest of the cast because they're not crazy people. Like, they're just ordinary human beings that have to deal with all this bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And
that have natural emotional responses to stimuli.
Yes. And, you know, Krillin is not doing great, but as is one of his character traits, he grits his teeth and keeps going, for the
he
most
part. He tries his hardest not to, but he keeps going.
Exactly. he's brave, even though he tries really hard not to be. Bulma, on the other hand, responds, like, with a degree of, like, sincerity and genuineness that I actually think is really kind of out of character for this show. Like, if you read it that way, her response to being in this situation, like a complete nervous breakdown, basically, is...
Yeah, she's got cabin fever.
Incredibly well-written, incredibly well-paced. You know, she's extra mean and nasty and upset because she's disintegrating mentally.
And it escalates, like,
yeah,
properly.
It does. Yeah.
Like, it doesn't start at full bitch.
Right, exactly.
No.
Now, I wonder if this, which looks like excellent writing, was on purpose.
Almost certainly not.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Because, yeah, I look at it and it's like, you could say, oh, this is actually really good writing, or you could say, oh, the girl is being a bitch.
I think there are only happy accidents in this show.
Yeah, I feel like with the nuance to which you're describing, like, lends itself to a level of, like, intentionality that I don't think was there at its inception.
No, I agree
especially
with you.
Especially since Bulma's, like, most of her moments of breakdown are kind of technically non-canon.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You're right.
I keep forgetting about that.
Almost every instance of Bulma on Namek is anime exclusive. She's pretty much entirely forgotten in the manga form.
Yeah.
Well, that explains a lot. Like, the constant cutaways to her are weird at times.
It makes a lot of sense, though. She's the Sokka. She's surrounded by benders. She's useless in this fight.
Well, that's let's be nice. Let's not badmouth Sokka.
Oh,
what? I mean, listen. Like, both
Sokka's so much better written. Like, Bulma's great, but
but there's intentionality there. Like I said,
right.
I'm just saying that they're the more gadget oriented, non superpowered person in a gang of full on superpowered bozos.
Right, it's just that I believe that everything that's cool about Sokka as a character is actually on purpose.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is something I've been thinking about, like, about since the... right after the podcast started, that I was curious what people thought about.
Mm-hmm.
No, I appreciate that, and that's what I like about doing this show also, is that we can sort of, like, dig up these things to think about whether or not they were intentional. They are there, and they are, like... worthwhile.
Oh, for sure.
71, episode 71, the English title is Goku is Ginyu, and Ginyu is Goku.
You're gonna love this
Smashing Pumpkin song?
This is, so pay close attention. The Japanese title roughly translates to Surprised! Goku is Ginyu, and Ginyu is Goku.
Okay, that's a Smashing Pumpkin song.
played over the credits of a Batman movie.
So this episode opens with a pan, like we get a shot of each of the three dead Namekian warriors, and the visual of the first one is the best thing in this show since Nappa's googly eyes.
It is grotesque.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Away. What?
It's only there for a second, but he's just like, the only thing I can compare it to is like if you're playing a really old shooter game and like you crouch down next to the body of somebody that you've killed and they're making a really, really grotesque, like low poly count,
oh, God.
bad, like pained face.
You're painting that was word picture here.
That was clearly never supposed to be seen that close.
Yeah.
That's what this reminds me of, very specifically.
Good
it's gravy. A strong way to start an episode.
Mm-hmm. All I could think like was, man, these guys really like drawing dead Namekians.
Yeah, they're looking messed up.
It is an art form, and they have mastered it.
Ginyu is laughing maniacally.
Yeah.
He seems to have fully lost it.
Yeah.
Confusing both Goku and Jace.
He's just shooting blasts at Goku, who is easily deflecting them, yeah. And he's just laughing.
He is having a chuckle.
He takes off his scouter and tosses it to Jace for safekeeping.
These fucking Frieza Force can never decide whether they want the scouter on or the scouter off.
Well, he can't let Goku have the scouter when he switches bodies.
When he what?
When he
oh,
does
sorry,
what?
Spoiler! Sorry! Oh!
That's national security.
Nobody can know about this technique. Actually, I am curious if anybody does know about that technique. Clearly, Jace does.
That's
yeah,
true.
Jace isn't surprised. I suspect Frieza knows, too.
Jace is a confusing one because he seems to know about it, but he also seems to not know about it.
Yeah, it took him too long to catch on.
I feel like
maybe
he didn't.
Maybe he's only like heard that Ginyu does this, but he's only ever seen Captain Ginyu in his cowhorn form.
Yeah, or he doesn't know. You know, he doesn't know when the kinds of situations where Ginyu likes to do it. I don't know. Jace isn't very smart, so.
No. This much we know.
That's why he holds the briefcase.
But I feel like the second Goku established that he is significantly stronger than them, instead of freaking out and having a panic attack, they should have been like, oh, hell yeah.
Maybe Ginyu forgot also.
I genuinely thought Ginyu was acting when he started freaking out,
mm-hmm.
because I was like, oh, he's already planning about the switch,
mm-hmm.
and he's just like trying to make Goku think he's worried about it.
We have no way of knowing how long he's been in this body. Maybe he has forgotten that he can do that.
Yeah, true. I've got a note it's about possible. That a bit later.
He might also like. I feel like Goku offers really solid evidence for the idea that the key to being incredibly powerful in this universe is being really stupid and just constantly forgetting basic things about yourself.
Yeah.
And like, I think Kill 6 Billion Demons supports this. That the way that you attain supreme power is by being a big goddamn idiot.
I mean, I feel like there's not much difference between that and being pure of heart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that would explain.
You're all heart. No that, brain.
That would explain why Goku can ride the Nimbus, because that's the definition it's going with.
True.
Your head must be that of a cloud.
That comes up later, too.
Before Frieza and Nail start their fight, Frieza lets Nail
okay, real
know.
Quick,
yeah?
Real quick, I just hopped over to the Dragon Ball Wikia.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
there's a drawing of Ginyu as a child.
Yep,
with the spiked horns and the like little veiny head.
Yeah.
So this
is
his original body.
I don't know that I buy that.
Yeah.
And he has switched with a rich child to take his money.
I have also read and seen that. I don't buy it.
Yeah.
That's a cop out.
Are you telling me that the instruction manual on Super Saiyan Densetsu for the Super Famicom may not be canonical information?
It's only canon when I think it should be.
Now yeah. that I think about I'll get to this later, but now that I think about it, I think I actually do buy it.
Oh.
It makes something that happens later make sense that
okay.
I didn't get at all.
Before Frieza and Nail fight, Frieza lets Nail know he's only going to use his left hand as defense.
He's barely even used his hands at all. He's just winked and blown kisses.
Nail goes for a chop at Frieza's neck, who presents it willingly. Kind of just, like, turns his head and just says, have at it. Here you go. Nail doesn't even make Frieza flinch, but Frieza does grab Nail's arm and tears it off.
I have a note here. Frieza's fingers, like, punch into Nail's arm like a ripe peach. And it is yikes to the 10th power.
Didn't we speculate previously that Raditz's horrible jokes were just, like, Frieza Force culture? Like,
Dave, I'm glad that you mentioned this.
Something you do. Yeah, I hope everyone had the same thought here.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all did.
Comes all the way down from the top.
Uh-huh.
You can't miss it. It's
you want to tell us why?
Because he says to Nail, there goes your arm. Maybe you can use it as a back scratcher. And then, like, 20 solid seconds pass with Frieza just, like, tittering vaguely to himself and is just like, use it as a back scratcher.
Where do I come up with these? I'm so clever.
Wasn't there a couple of episodes ago where Frieza told one of his henchmen that he never jokes?
Yeah.
Probably.
Maybe this is
that
why.
Was itself a joke.
Hey, he's the emperor of the universe. He can change his personal policies whenever he wants.
Good point.
And he does, as often as he changes his head of command.
Nail regrows his arm, which impresses Frieza a little bit.
He makes a copy of that power, which is a thing the scouters can do, I guess?
Which means nothing.
I don't think so, because he doesn't
ever,
do that.
I don't think ever comes up again.
I think it's, like, it's just a bestiary.
Yeah, like a
maybe
like
he
a
just
Pokedex.
Makes a note.
Yeah.
Yeah. Note to research it later.
Research it, try to develop it himself, maybe.
Yeah. Bulma's hoverbike adventure continues, and she's being chased by a random lone pterodactyl.
Just
like the ones from Earth.
Yeah.
Why is this happening?
She just attracts, like, Dragon Ball era megafauna to her.
Yeah, this might as well be episode one of Dragon Ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pretty much.
This is literally what was happening to her.
Big, giant Earth dino monsters running around Namek for no reason.
I kept wanting to check and see if the T-Rex was missing most of its tail when it shows up.
I think, like, they put it in that cave so that you wouldn't be able to see.
Mm-hmm.
So forever. It would be
like, they probably did just reuse animation, but positioned it as such.
Good point, actually.
Because it's the... Yeah, she tries to escape into a nearby cave, but it's inhabited by the same goddamn T-Rex that Gohan met on Earth. It's the same palette. They didn't even change the color. It's the same one.
Hey.
It's got the same fucking sword scars.
But we've established by now that at this point, that T-Rex is learning magic.
Yes, I'm glad that you mentioned that too, because that was my first thought.
We've improved.
We inadvertently made this show better.
Oh God! Does that mean the witches are familiar? Made it all the way to Namek.
Yes.
Teleportation.
He's hunting for Gohan.
It means that currently there is a saber-toothed tiger on Namek somewhere.
Yep. Can we give a shout out to the horrible mood whiplash of Bulma witnessing planetary genocide followed immediately the next time
to
we
dino antics
by fun cartoon dino chases.
Here's my theory on this. Either, like you guys were talking about, she's having a little breakdown, and maybe she is, but what if capsules don't have to just have things? What if she just keeps some dinosaur capsules around just in case,
just to make it interesting for her?
Maybe they're for, like, you know, if there's a bigger alien dinosaur that she needs to escape from, just like throw it like a Pokeball.
Let the dinosaurs fight.
I cannot say at all that her dad would not develop that technology.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm on board for Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z.
I thought you were insinuating that Bulma had accidentally caught a dinosaur in her car capsule, like a spider in a shoe.
Well,
she opened up the car capsule and oops, there's a pterodactyl also in it.
I almost like that better. than her, like, feeling
How'd
nostalgic for
there?
Episode one of Dragon Ball and just releasing dinosaurs to reenact it.
Bulma winds up on the back of the pterodactyl, but falls off into the open, waiting mouth of the T-Rex.
Mm-hmm.
But at the very last minute, she's saved by a mysterious figure. The show presents this man to us as if we would have no idea who it is.
some kind of bald man with
wearing orange pajamas.
Huh.
But he's in shadow, so he must be evil.
Bulma covers this mysterious figure in sand, but it's Krillin.
Yeah.
It's just Krillin.
Yep.
Yes. You've known him your whole life.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
His silhouette is instantly recognizable.
It was designed that way. and not just Krillin, but of course little Gohan.
The two of them fill Bulma in on what's been happening.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Over the past hours or days. Who can say? Three sons.
Three sons. We don't know. That's probably also why Bulma's unhinged. She probably doesn't know when to sleep.
there's no night.
Yeah. Gohan very forwardly yanks the radar out of Bulma's pockets.
Yeah,
excuse
you?
I don't Gohan really.
He just sticks his fingies right in there.
But then I remembered he is five. Like, he is just
five. He should
five.
Still, yeah. Like, know a little bit about personal space, especially if he's doing algebra and stuff.
Would Piccolo have taught him personal space?
Would Goku have taught him?
Nope.
Goku didn't teach him shit.
Nope.
Well, Aaron, that was Piccolo's first lesson. He said, you stay here, I'm gonna go over there.
That's right. That is right. That's correct.
Don't get in my bubble,
I'm
kid.
Sorry, I forgot.
First lesson.
That's lesson
fuck
one.
Off. Well, Goku, the only thing Goku really taught Gohan is, well, as long as he keeps up with his karate exercises, he can do whatever he pleases.
I also like that Bulma doesn't really object to them just stealing the dragon radar, more so than leaving.
Yeah, it's fine. Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, Krillin yells back, oh yeah, Goku's here.
Yeah.
By
and
the way,
just for
we
minute,
just saw
like...
Dad.
And then she just starts swooning.
Oh yeah,
over
it was
Goku.
Gohan that had the courtesy to fill her
right.
in.
And then she asks...
And she just stares at a cloud and wonders,
No, then she asks, did Goku mention me? And then Gohan lies and says yes.
He sure did, yeah. Bulma.
Sure, huh? Yep.
Gohan looks at Bulma and he sees a woman whose eyes tell him that she would make some questionable choices if he said no. So he says, yes, Dad did mention you.
He's a smart kid, that Gohan.
Absolutely.
Yep. Smart as a whip. Nothing like your father.
Probably the smartest non-brief in the show.
You know what, Bulma? He wouldn't shut up about you.
Went on and on.
Just
and
has
you know,
so
and
much
you know
to
what?
Say.
Gohan has a type of intelligence that even the briefs don't have.
Street smarts.
Right. Common?
Yeah. Common emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence? Yeah.
So Ginyu pulls a strange move. He punches himself directly in the chest, puncturing it.
Yeah, he's a real bleeding heart, that
yeah,
Ginyu.
Yeah, no, he doesn't punch.
Were you holding on to that this whole recording?
Maybe.
he doesn't punch himself. He stabs himself in the chest with his hand.
With his well-manicured fingernails.
It's very yucky.
Yeah, it's quite visceral. Visceral.
Viscerally miserable.
Yeah, that works.
Before Goku knows what's going on, Ginyu pulls out his signature technique, which is the body swap beam. It goes right into his mouth.
And when he swallows, like...
Yeah, this is probably to date the least favorite thing Goku has eaten.
I was gonna
say,
not
many things on that list.
In the pantheon of mouth beams, my least favorite...
Well, this one is, I don't know, I feel like this almost maybe sort of explains why he apparently never uses it, because, like, in theory, it's the ultimate game changer, but anyone who had even one more brain cell than Goku would never get hit with it.
Right.
It's like the special beam cannon.
Much like in the video game Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yep. Yeah. You mean the special I always fall prey to every time?
Hell, Jason, I have some bad news for you.
You could even argue that he perfected the technique, he knows how to do it, but he has just literally never found a time when it would be practical to use. Until
yeah, someone who's willing to wait around 5 minutes
and,
to see what's
hey,
happening.
That's why he was...
Maybe he used it on a literal sitting duck once. Just to
yeah.
test it out.
And that's why he was throwing all those random blasts at Goku and seeing if he would just soak them up.
Mm-hmm.
You're just gonna stand there while I do this, right?
Yeah.
All right.
You need to be perfectly still while this happens, okay?
Which is why he's laughing maniacally the whole time he's throwing those.
If only Piccolo had been able to watch this happening, he'd just be like, I thought that was a joke. I didn't think he'd actually do it.
That, I think, leads us to our initial debate of, is this model, is this purple-horned Ginyu the original Ginyu, or is this just the latest model?
I think that we should table this for now.
Yeah?
Because this is going to come up again, and I have a lot more questions about this technique that I feel like will be more appropriate.
I think we have a lot of the same questions, Tyler.
Yeah. when we see it used again, and we will, not very long from now, probably next week, I have a lot of questions about it.
Yeah, we'll do a whole intelligence squared debate.
But for now, we can say the animation sequence for this body switch is a trip.
Epileptic guy. For those of you who are photosensitive, please fast forward about like 20 or 40 seconds in this episode, because it's a real flashy show.
If the tunnel scene in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory was a beam attack,
there's no earthly way of knowing where the show is surely going.
Well, now you've led
Rand fans are proud of that flash.
Now you've led me to conclude something that I didn't need to think about, but I now know is 1,000% accurate.
Oh.
Willy Wonka would love Dragon Ball Z.
Sure.
Willy Wonka wished for immortality from the Dragon Balls, let's be honest.
His favorite arc is the
Unstoppable Gobstopper.
I love Captain Ginyu because he's this complete fucking idiot. Like, he's this complete, ridiculous, flamboyant dumbass.
Yeah.
But also has a type of common sense that I don't think anyone else in the show has, where it's like, okay, we're here. In the last episode, a couple episodes, it was like, all right, we got all the Dragon Balls. Frieza's gonna go off and do something else. You guard them. And he's like, okay, we have a high-tech spaceship here that probably has some sort of awesome security grid. We have amazing futuristic technology. We have, miraculous planet-destroying key powers. Just fucking bury them.
Yeah.
and if the dragon radar, which we have established is cheating, did not exist, it would have worked.
Yeah, it stumps Vegeta.
Fooled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now he's just like, okay, I'm gonna fatally injure myself and then switch bodies and then let him bleed to death in my body. This is I like Ginyu.
He's got a certain level of cunning.
Yes.
Anybody else would have just done the body swap. It is the fatal injury that sets him apart as the captain.
Especially because he's seen firsthand how powerful Goku is.
Right.
Yeah.
If he had
he's
access
shown
to that
his perfect power,
he could then just use it to obliterate Goku in his old body. But no, he has to go that extra mile, that extra Ginyu mile.
Ginyu, now in Goku's body, takes his scouter back from Jace. And the two of them take off to take care of Goku's friends, while Goku sort of sadly sky limps behind them.
Looking
oh, come
haggard.
On, guys! Come back!
You know you're in trouble when Goku is the one saying, "No, this can't be! This is impossible!"
Goku is the kid in the Christmas Story, stuck to the lamp.
Oh, no!
I can't lower my hands because it won't staunch the blood flow and I'll die.
I'll literally bleed to death.
I can't put my arms down.
Come back.
That's all I have for episode 71. Any closing thoughts?
I love how Vegeta shows up in the last 2 seconds of the episode.
Yeah, he has been flying
asshole?
For how long now?
Yeah.
Episode 72, the English title is Calling the Eternal Dragon.
The Japanese title roughly translates to, "Come out, great Shenron, make my wish fulfilled."
Vegeta makes it back to Frieza's effectively unguarded ship. It is surrounded by dudes, but it's almost as if they're not even there.
It's a sleepy day today on Frieza base. Vegeta has...
Frieza's out on the town.
Vegeta delivers my favorite line in the favorite way ever. Upon arriving on this base, he just goes, "Hello, boys!"
And then shoots him in the face.
He can very effortlessly defeat all of these grunts at this point. So yep, he's just kind of walking the halls of the ship as they follow him around.
He's literally walking through them.
He's a great manager. He immediately commands a presence.
The way they follow him while he's just walking through the hallway.
It's very good.
It's very good. Mm-hmm. It's very strong.
He murders the whole hallway with a single ki blast. Mm-hmm. Just for fun.
Yeah. He also does a really weird thing where somebody shoots him with a laser gun, and he catches the laser beam and turns it into a shotgun shot, and then throws it back at
him. Like refracts it into
a million
tiny lasers.
Yeah. That's science.
I wanted him to take a bite out of it like an apple.
that's what Raccoon would have done.
Right. Vegeta starts rooting around the ship for the Dragon Balls.
It's very, you know, clear this is the new voice, still getting used to it, but he just sounds really bored when he goes, "Takes care of them."
That was my favorite thing he said. This
real dissatisfied.
Just like, ugh, this again.
That's that.
Interns.
Ginyu is taking Goku's body out for a joyride, just zipping all over
some
the place.
Some fun, eh, Jace?
Whoa!
How would Jace know?
Yeah,
Jace is still Jace.
He does a tumble and turn.
Jace is just thinking, "Why you gotta be a dick, Captain?"
My notes for the following episodes are weird because I have them labeled as Ginyoku and Gokinyu.
Which is which?
The first section is who
it actually is.
Yeah, who it is. So Ginyoku is Ginyu in Goku's body.
Gotcha.
Ginyoku also sounds like a Pokemon.
Yeah, it sounds like something I would order at a grill.
That too.
Some steam fried Ginyoku.
That sounds great right now, actually.
Vegeta cleans himself up and he picks out some fresh armor. Yeah. And he puts his
you see his hands?
Puts his gloves on. It's disgusting.
I blushed like a maid from the 19th century.
This was a beautiful scene, and we are all blessed to behold it.
Wouldn't have seen it, but those dryers just take forever.
I love that line, because it's like, yes, these dryers do take forever, and also apparently melt your shoulder pads off.
I like this armor. This is one of my favorite Vegeta looks.
It is a great look.
His navy blue
it's
pajamas.
Much more streamlined.
Because, I mean, those shoulder pads get chipped off anyway, so might as well skip it, make it easier to draw, animate. It still looks like Vegeta.
And, like, they're very much signature Frieza Force, and he has departed that ship.
Yep.
Right, right.
So
Not flying the colors anymore.
When you think about it, like, the shoulder pads were, like, functionally useless. Because I get that they were, like, inspired by samurai like shoulder pads, which were designed to like deflect arrows, but when you're literally bulletproof, there's no point.
Krillin and Gohan arrive at Frieza's ship and they start digging up the Dragon Balls.
They seem really surprised to find another one and another one when like the Dragon Radar said, "Yep, he's all seven.
They're over there." The seven means there's seven of them.
The Dragon Radar is insufficient evidence to overcome Krillin's pessimism at this point.
He does not believe in Bulma.
He has given up so hard that even numbers lie to him.
Well, numbers have always lied to him. Haven't you been paying attention?
They start laughing as they find each and every Dragon Ball, and then there is a slow-mo transition between their laughing faces and their serious faces. Their let's get down to business faces.
No, Krillin just begins to realize, wait, this is weird.
Hey, we have all seven Dragon Balls. Oh, shit.
Krillin tries to summon the dragon.
Here's a weird question. Mm-hmm. Is this the first time Krillin's ever had to summon the dragon with Dragon Balls?
Krillin personally?
Yeah.
What probably.
Think about it. He wasn't there the first time, for sure.
And nope.
Yeah, it might be the first time for him.
He delivers the dragon summoning with, we'll call it, some flair.
It's gusto. It's
gusto?
Yeah. Some style, as Ginyu would say.
I pronounce it with a U.
Mm-hmm. It's more stylish. So he tries to summon the dragon, and it doesn't work.
That won't stop Krillin and Gohan for laughing for 27 solid seconds as they hallucinate Mirage, the summoning of a dragon, which is clearly what must be happening, because we just see them laughing at air.
He tried it twice, because there was a commercial break.
Oh, that's true! Oh, I love when anime does that. I love that part.
It's like, well, this animation of him like spinning around and throwing his arms up is pretty cool. So he just
fully does a tumble turn.
Vegeta is getting pretty frustrated that it's taken these guys so long to figure this shit out.
Yeah.
Vegeta gets a little meta.
Yeah, Krillin's like, well, Goku must know the password, right? Because he knew that there was one.
Surely.
That's just a weird leap in logic.
Ginyu and Jace arrive, and Krillin buys it immediately that this is Goku.
A lot of things happen at once here. I like how Krillin even says, like, given Goku's track record of converting enemies into allies, Krillin just straight up assumes that, yeah, Jace is on our side now.
Right.
It's really not that unusual.
I mean, he did run off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the team. Here's your Piccolo pamphlet.
Yeah, there's a whole, like, onboarding slideshow. So, you're the new Piccolo. Congratulations.
It would be a slideshow, but the name would be crossed off on the first slide because they don't have enough money to make a new one. So it says, so, you're the new Yamcha. So, you're the new Tien. So, you're the new Piccolo. So, you're the new Vegeta. There's a lot of evidence to the contrary that this is Goku, such as Jace being there, and Goku is now wearing a scouter, and he also sounds like Captain Ginyu.
And he's smirking.
I have some questions.
Instead of smiling.
I just have a quote written down. I don't remember the context of it. I think Krillin just says, like, so you defeated that guy, Captain Ginyu. And Ginyu, in Goku's body, says, first of all, Captain Ginyu was a worthy opponent.
Actually.
He wasn't owned at all.
And he was really handsome and cool.
Very strong.
And good at fighting.
And successful. Very strong. And...
he introduced me to my wife.
Oh, God. Would
when we're through here, we're going to wish him back.
Would Captain Ginyu and Hercule get along?
Yeah.
Maybe at least to a little bit. They both appreciate flair.
Yeah, I was going to say, Ginyu would definitely appreciate Mr. Satan's flair.
Yeah.
And style. And poses.
Even after getting swatted away by Ginyu, Krillin is still pretty sure that that's Goku. It looks just like him.
I made a note here that Jace actually crossed him, like, started to cross himself. Like,
yeah.
He did.
Like, the Catholic cross, like, while Goku is about to lay the smackdown, sorry, yeah. Ginyoku started to lay the smackdown on Krillin.
I genuinely love that he just straight up did an open palm slap to Krillin.
Ginyu and Jace try out some new poses. And Jace shouts, tell him what time it is, baby.
Apparently it's Kabuki theater
time.
Yeah,
he also shouts, yow!
Yow!
Which I love. Oh, it's full-on Kabuki realness, and I love it. Like the hair,
I did like those Kabuki poses.
The
they
hair
were
is whipping, mm-hmm. and tiptoeing.
That neck is going all over the place.
Yeah, Ginyoku is doing like the full,
The response is, it's time for you to die.
Okay.
I just have a quick translation note. It doesn't come up that often for me.
Sure.
But Vegeta calls Kakarot Goku. That's not his name.
Right. Did he?
He did.
I didn't catch that.
I rewound it to check.
That's Captain Ginyu in Goku's body. In Vegeta's body.
Did your ears let loose a small trickle of blood upon hearing Vegeta say Goku?
I was watching with Gordy, and then I heard it, and I said, what the fuck did he just say?
That's worse than any swear word I could ever hear on this show.
You know, that would explain why I suddenly started throwing up at the end of that episode.
Like, That plus seeing Vegeta gloveless, this episode is like, I'm smack putting down the NC-17 rating for this whole thing.
Gonna have to revisit whatever that website was where we were looking at the parent ratings.
Yes. Vulgarity. Gloveless Vegeta. Vegeta says the worst cuss, which is Goku.
There's only a cuss if Vegeta says
it. Yes, precisely.
And he does.
Maybe he was just trying it out to see how it feels, and he didn't like it.
He immediately detested it.
Tried it out like that mercy move.
Since nobody was listening, like he was, yeah.
He spits afterwards.
Yeah. So
that didn't feel good at all.
Awful.
What a dumb name. It's not even a vegetable.
Is that Goku?
Go cucumber. Maybe he tries to save it.
Go cucumber.
Just
no. Dry. No, that doesn't work. That's terrible.
Just dry heaves every
no
time.
No one's
he
ever heard of
go
cucumber.
Gokinyu arrives, and the pieces finally start to fall into place for Krillin and Gohan.
I made a note here that Gohan says to Krillin, "Look into his eyes, and you'll tell that he is not my father." And I made a note that Gohan did look into this person's eyes and found something. Intelligence, which his father clearly does not possess. Intellect.
Yeah. Side of the family.
Can't be him.
There was a certain spark in his eyes that he did not, that Goku does not have.
It's at this point, I think, that Gohan starts to imagine some what-if scenarios.
Some
oh, yeah.
great what-if scenarios.
I think this he inherited from his mom.
So,
this particular
so I was actually,
anxiety train.
I was actually watching this with my wife, and she immediately asks, but how would Chi-Chi feel about this?
Definitely an improvement.
No, you can see her face in those imaginations. She is not a fan.
I don't know.
Well, that's what Goku.
Yeah,
Gohan.
Gohan is terrified at the notion.
Purple dad.
Yeah. Lunch with my purple daddy.
I already have a funny colored dad, and he's green.
Goku tells Ginyu that though he may have his body, there's no way he knows how to utilize its full potential. The episode ends with Ginyu starting to charge up to prove him wrong.
You won't be able to throw the punches that I throw. So,
because I trained so good.
You don't know how a Kamehameha is said.
Shit, I said it out loud. Now you
damn it.
Say it.
Beans.
Fuck.
Yeah, and yeah. Weirdly enough, he knows how
well,
to.
At
use...
least you don't have the sensu beans.
Oh, he has the sensu beans.
Ah, beans.
Well, no. Here's the best part. I bet Ginyu knows how to use Goku's body way better. Like he instantly unlocks the Saiyan telepathy to its full potential.
It's true.
He just starts thinking things to Goku. Like, wait, you had
Maybe?
This? You didn't use it?
Maybe.
And Goku's like, wait, I had that?
Maybe he and Jace were, like, telling jokes telepathically, and that's what he said, isn't this fun out loud?
What fun? Secret jokes. Just for us, Jace.
We can talk about Frieza even when he's in the same room as us.
Talk about how very cool and strong he is.
In that cool little purple thing at the tip of his tail.
What
I love
so
purple.
Cool.
Is it a scorpion? We don't know.
Is it soft? I want to squeeze it.
It's the details that make you stylish, Jace.
Well, that means it's time to Hail Satan.
More beach episode.
There is a lot to cover this time.
Shit.
Oh, yeah, we've got a lot to
give
deal
us
with.
The rundown. Give us the recap.
Yeah, a quick rundown of the important...
For the sake of us who were not here last week.
Right. The important bullet points being that Senzu, the farmer, is actually the lost scion of the Briefs family. He is the estranged brother of Dr. Briefs. We also learned that Dr. Briefs' canonical, like real-ass in-the-show name, is Scratch, which, as we all know, is...
Wait, was that Dr. Briefs or the cat?
It was the cat.
The cat.
Yeah.
Did I not say the cat?
Yeah, you said Dr. Briefs.
You said Dr. Briefs.
Oh, shit. Yeah, Dr. Briefs' cat's name in the show is Scratch, which is a well-known alias of the devil.
Mm-hmm.
this could be related to Briefs's rise to power on Earth. Who knows? Maybe we'll get into that.
That dude sold his soul.
Hercule, Videl, and Miss Pizza took a well-earned vacation to the beach, and while Hercule and Pizza were making out behind a dumpster somewhere, Videl followed some turtle tracks on the beach and ended up befriending Roshi's roommate, Turtle.
Who got lost again.
With her new friend, she started to practice some punches and kicks against the waves, pretending in her mind to be her hero, Krillin. Before they leave the beach at the end of the day, Videl receives a gift from Turtle, which is a pearl painted to look like the four-star Dragon Ball.
Aww.
At the exchange of the gift is when Bielsa Barbara and her squad, the Bad Chicks, as we have now dubbed them, also arrive at the beach because they were looking for Turtle to press Dragon Ball info out of him. And also at the same time, the farmer and Mr. Robot, in a mech that we did not describe, rises out of the ocean looking for Hercule and also searching for the Dragon Balls because he heard about them through Raditz's recordings.
Wow. We left ourselves at a really big cliffhanger.
Yeah, a lot's going on.
We should probably put the series on hiatus and then do a reboot 5 years later.
What's Chi-Chi up to?
Just do some reruns.
Yeah, just cut away.
Well, no. Mecha rises out of the ocean. All these gigantic, you know, tangle of different storylines are about to collide into each other, Homestuck style. And then,
yeah. Oh God, is it time for our cascade? Are we ready to break new grounds?
There will be a time to make that joke. Probably this is not it.
True. Yeah, we're at descend at best.
So I have thoughts this week.
Please,
we need to start back at the beginning, the beginning of humanity. Even
very good place to start.
There's a family on Earth known as the Briefs.
Uh-huh.
There are two brothers. There's one who's very good at science, and there's one who's not really good at anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of a slouch. The other brother gets all of the accolades in life and is inventing all the time. New technology no one's ever seen before. He's a prodigy. And the other brother stumbles on a mysterious cat in an alleyway somewhere.
Oh, is the other brother the moon princess?
Building ships by daylight. Installing cappuccinos by moonlight. Oh, God. So, wait, you're saying that Dr. Briefs, in his youth, when he's feeling dejected at his genius older brother's accolades,
mm-hmm.
makes some kind of a deal?
He makes a deal with perhaps a devil.
Mm-hmm.
A talking cat?
You know that cat is satanic when it looks through the screen at the audience at all times.
Yes.
It doesn't have a little moon-shaped patch on its head, so...
Can't trust
it. Yeah, you can't trust it. But Dr. Briefs does.
Mm-hmm.
This cat grants him his one wish, which is to assume the position of his brother. Knowledge, and all.
Shenron, that wish comes with a cost.
It does.
Much like the Faust of the Faustian tales, he asks for all of the knowledge of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm getting out of this is the farmer was Dr. Light and Dr. Briefs was Dr. Wily.
This whole time.
Hmm.
No, I literally just said it. He's Dr. Faust.
What I'm saying is that the good Briefs was cast out so that the bad Briefs could become the god of science.
And the good Briefs labored in obscurity on a farm for...
Never knowing
20
how
years.
His brother...
Mm-hmm.
Not even knowing what he had lost.
Until Raditz's recordings reawakened his potential. And his thirst for vengeance.
So, we cut back to now. The mech is rising. What's this mech look like? What did he actually build? We should decide on that.
It's whatever technology he's got on hand. So it'll
it's
look
just
like
a total junk bot.
It's the Saiyan pod.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a total junk bot, but it can only be made out of like Saiyan pod parts. maybe parts of the capsule 2 that plunged into the wherever it went, the one that Chi-Chi took.
He scavenged from his brother's backyard.
Yeah.
I like the idea that it's... I can see it being... Well, how big is this mech?
Just big enough for him.
Oh, yeah, okay, thinking, I was envisioning something huge that was like a pile of junk attached to the pod as a core. But
No, you got to think like Toriyama. Every technology is compact.
It's
probably closer to Bulma's like bot that she used in the ocean.
Yeah,
more like an exosuit.
But the
I
center
guess.
Is the Saiyan spaceship,
right? It looks like that portal robot.
That's where my brain was going.
Yeah.
It's just the Saiyan pod with arms and legs.
The only way he unlocks it is by plugging in his bionic arm.
So he comes out of the ocean, and he calls out Mr. Satan for a battle.
Satan!
He calls out the champion of the world to do battle with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the champion
Except
of the
he's
world...
he's not Mr. Satan yet. We should...
Right.
No, that's right. He's a regular day Hercule.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So he calls out to Hercule, and Hercule, the savior during the Saiyan invasion, in front of everyone on the beach, agrees to the battle, but first he needs to change out of his swimsuit.
Fair.
What's
fair.
He rocking? I think he's got like a classy, like, 1910s, like, striped unipiece thing. Like one of those old timey ones, like the red and white.
Can it be that, but with a flame decal?
Yeah, I was gonna say that, or like full on like Borat sling,
or a shark and flames.
Oh god, the banana hammock.
Yeah,
I wasn't gonna say it,
but also with a flame decal. Somehow.
So as everyone on the beach cheers, while the hero goes off to get ready. He just runs away. he just leaves. Leaving his daughter with a turtle on the beach, who then gets picked up by her mom, Beelze Barbara. And the crew. Because they need someone with good detective skills to help them find the Dragon Balls. And what's this? Her daughter already has a Dragon Ball.
Yeah, I picture the exchange going, "Hey, honey, you want to help me find these mystical Dragon Balls? Here, I'll describe it to you. It's like a pearl with little stars painted on it." And then Mattel just, "You mean this?"
Got one right here.
From the background, Launch says, "Wow, that was fast.
You're really good at this."
Yeah.
This is obviously the weekend Barbara gets Videl. Like, honestly, it's been...
Right.
It's been so long.
I mean, she is a wanted criminal, but still.
Yeah.
She gets her weekends.
True.
So they leave with Videl.
Does Videl go willingly?
More or less. I mean, it is her mom.
Yeah. She's conflicted.
Yeah.
Maybe she's glad that they're looking for Dragon Balls instead of doing crimes. Making a wish is a much better way to get what you want than holding the mayor hostage.
I approve of your new life choices, Mom.
And I think with her behind the scenes, she can kind of steer the bad chicks away from committing actual crimes and more towards hunting down, you know, rocks.
Also, Turtle really wants to tell them that the Dragon Ball is actually a fake, but he's afraid of Launch, so he like just kind of hangs back,
just hides in his shell for a
bit. It's Gohan. Good job.
Ooh.
So the bad chicks and Videl leave the beach, and the farmer Zenzu starts to get impatient. And he goes to a port-a-john where he finds Hercule just cowering inside. And knowing everyone as he does, like keeping tabs on all of his enemies, he is aware of the situation. And he lets Hercule know, your wife just took off with your kid. And Hercule lets Zenzu know that it's his fault, because if he hadn't distracted him, he would have been able to help her. He would have been able to keep her safe.
Which is true.
I would have saved her from that monster Beelze Barbara.
So to make things right, the two of them have to team up to rescue Hercule's kidnapped child.
Drift compatible, yes. Team up.
The crossover issue.
Mr. Satan X Senzu briefs.
So that's all I have this week. Hercule and Zenzu team up like Goku and Piccolo. To rescue their kidnapped child.
To fight a more powerful enemy.
Yeah, only...
Of Mr. Satan's ex-wife.
Yeah.
Mr. Satan wrote this story.
We're just telling it.
So what other details do you guys have for this this epic adventure that they're going to go on.
I was mostly captivated. I was sitting in on some fan fiction.
So strong.
I thought about it a lot since last week.
fan fiction premise number 624, which I don't need to write now because you took care of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, cross that one off. Instead of a port-a-john, is it like one of those old-timey changing booths?
It's a capsule core port-a-john.
So it has a cappuccino machine.
Yeah, which is odd considering.
Well, now it helps. Now we know that the guy who designs all this stuff is enthralled to infernal powers.
Every piece of technology needs to be able to make food in some
way. That was the bargain.
No, it's port-a-johns, so they like offer some weird food. Like there's just a weird Cinnabon slot in the side.
They offer the yogurt. They offer the poop yogurt.
Oh God. Oh no.
Keeps regular.
Activia.
Is there anything else that you guys want to, or anyone you want to touch on this week?
I said it as a joke, but now I am curious what Chi-Chi's up to.
Sure. What is Chi-Chi up to? We're going to see her again in the show.
Having a month-long anxiety attack.
Yeah.
Isn't she hanging out at the Briefs compound?
Yeah, she's waiting for repairs for the ship.
That's right.
She's just
But what does she do in the meantime?
Her doing something besides pining and doing laundry.
Yeah, she makes sweaters. She stress knits, basically.
She washes dishes.
She cracks them.
A lot, for some reason.
Can she go to the gun store?
Yes, she's just going to the gun range with Oolong.
Oh my god.
Oolong's like, sister, we need to blow off some steam.
You know what the most amazing thing about this episode is? We just went through all that stuff with a robot rising out of the surf and presumably Hercule and the farmer doing like a comic book cover team up pose, and the bad chick showing up, and then Aaron just described the thing that I want for the one panel of this episode.
Just hard smash cut to just, I'm picturing Chi-Chi and Oolong with the goggles and the big ear muffs because Oolong's got the big ears, and you just hear pop, pop, pop.
And then from Chi-Chi's booth, it's a machine gun.
Yeah. Yes.
She just went right to it.
Yeah, there's a Vegeta shaped piece of paper on the other end.
Yeah, I'm going to be real with you. I don't see this one being a one panel comic.
It's too good.
Yeah.
It's too much meat. I'm saying that if you had to pick one thing this whole episode, I would want it to be Oolong and Chi-Chi and not the gun range. Out of everything.
But I want to complicate things a little bit also.
Okay.
Oh.
Turtle retreats back to Mr. Roshi and informs him that a little girl has been kidnapped by Launch and some other girls.
Hmm.
And says, we need
Does
to help
Roshi...
them. We need to help her. And Roshi...
Get Roshi
hears
to action.
Launch. And that's all he needs to hear.
Well, then.
He immediately just takes... There's a Roshi-shaped... cartoon dust cloud where once the old hermit stood, and a Roshi-shaped hole in the wall. Buffalo gal, won't you come out tonight?
Oh my god, I can see that so clearly.
The last thing that I had for Chi-Chi is that she goes to the gun store, and she asks the clerk, what guns in here are good to kill aliens? And
well, young lady, I'm glad you asked.
The, youthful, green-eyed boy at the counter sheepishly sells her a pistol.
Dun, dun, dun!
Wait, did she just walk into a restaurant thinking it was a gun store?
She walked into the landing pod.
I need a rocket launcher. Ma'am, this is an Applebee's?
I was insinuating that they were starting to disperse, but that works too.
Oh, I see. I like that, though.
Something else that I wanted to point out, because of the the drawing I did recently, the Ginyu squad of the bad chicks, Launch is a green-eyed person. And she has that weird changing ability that no one else on Earth has.
Maybe she's
an
alien?
It is not an earthly feature. Huh.
Just something to think about.
Beware the green-eyed children.
if that's it for what's the happy haps on Earth, Jason.
Yeah.
Give us a reading.
What are the planetary happy haps?
Give us the reading from the stars.
Let's look to the heavens. What's your saying, everyone?
Hey, Jason?
Yeah?
I just thought of a new title for this segment.
Oh, thank God.
If you'll have it.
My heart is open.
Give us a 4-star reading.
Yeah? Yeah, okay.
Oh, that owns, actually. Shit. Yep. All right. Well, Tyler, it's time for your 4-star reading. Because, as you folks may know, some of these characters on this show have canonical birthdays, and as such have canonical astrological signs. So at the end of each episode, we flip over to the horoscope section and give everyone a 4-star reading. Oh, it feels so good! Oh! Yeah, that just fits like a fresh pair of socks out of the dryer.
Way better than Vegeta saying Goku.
Yeah. Ugh. Palate cleanser. So our
4-star review.
Yeah, indeed.
Reading.
So the target of this reading will be Goku, our boy, our shining boy.
I was literally just about to ask, what is Goku's sign?
Goku's sign. He does have a canonical birthday.
He does.
You would hope. It is April April 16th. That would make him an Aries.
Of course. He would be an Aries.
I'm going to say that for every sign I mention. It's like, he would be a Pisces.
They would be.
So Goku, take this to heart. You might really need it in the coming times. If anyone is unsurprised by the unexpected behavior of others, it's you. You've come to realize that anyone is literally capable of anything. So when a loved one suddenly announces that they're about to do something that no one would ever expect, you may be taken a bit off guard, but be supportive, and they'll love you all the more for your encouragement.
Support them in their chance to give up.
Makes sense to me.
At the expense of your own life.
Also, hit your friend. Send him into a mountain.
He'll still be your friend afterwards.
Weirdly enough, yeah.
Become your friend.
Become your enemy.
Well, thank you all for listening again to another episode of Destructo Discourse. I appreciate everyone who tunes in every week. Jason, where around this internet can you be found?
The internet is a mysterious place, but you may find me at the coordinates. JCAVS, that's JAYCALVES, and that can get you to my Tumblr and my Twitter.
Aaron, what are you up to?
I don't do much on the internet, but if you're in the Southern Ohio area, you can come to the Black Box Improv Theater in Dayton, Ohio, and I'm in a group that performs on Wednesdays, but the theater has shows every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evening.
Dave, what's up with you?
I can still... and will continue to be found at Scythe, P-S-Y-T-H-E, on Archive of Our Own.
And rounding us out, Matt.
I work on many projects, you might argue too many, and you can find them at Monumentous Matt on Twitter or Define Prog anywhere else. One of these too many projects is illustrating the Hell Satan Adventures, which are posted on the Destructo Disc Twitter.
They're very good.
If you would like to see the Hail Satan Adventures in visual form, just follow Destructo_Disc on Twitter. D-I-S-C. If you want to email this show, you can do that at destructodiscourse@gmail.com. And if you would like to support the show and let other people know about it, you could tweet about it, you could write blogs about it, you could send it to your Facebook friends, or just send it to people on Tinder.
I like this show.
Yeah, check it out. Maybe you will too.
This person seems to like Goku. Swipe right.
A very helpful way to support the show is to go onto iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as they like to be known these days.
Yeah.
But I still call it iTunes.
Apple Podcasts sounds more tasty. I'd eat that.
head over there and write a review for us. And when you do, give us a rating of 4 stars.
We prefer...
Why not 5 stars?
Well...
Because 4 star is for Gohan.
Oh, I like that guy.
Like the Gohan?
The Gohan.
Which one?
The. The old man, the little man, the Dragon Ball, all of them. The Gohan.
We demand it.
The Trinity of Gohan.
The Father, the Son, and the Holy Gohan.
And the Father, the Son, and the Grandpa.
True.
Give us the Gohan. Thank you all for listening. We will see you next week. This has been Destructo Discourse. The road ahead you seem so cold and gray. When night never turns to day, don't you be afraid, go fly away. Chala, chala, no time to hesitate, don't want to search the earth, we're driven by the magic surprise. Get you through the night, oh Chala, hey Chala. No time to hesitate, don't search the earth. We did it by the magic surprise, oh Chala, hey Chala. Be cool, don't be afraid, you got the power to get you through the darkest night, Chala.